This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. It's been 16 years since a Republican won in Connecticut's 5th Congressional District. It was Nancy Johnson who lost to Chris Murphy after a longtime career in Congress, which included representing the former 6th District. Could 2022 be the year for a Republican to take back the 5th District seat? Coincidentally, it'll be the same year districts could be redrawn based on the latest census numbers. The 5th District in Connecticut has been described as purple with a wide range of voters from different political affiliations. Today on Where We Live, we talk to former state senator and Republican George Logan. He wants to stop Representative Johanna Hayes from winning a third term. Do you live in the 5th District? It's expected to be the most competitive congressional race in Connecticut next year. You can join our conversation, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome George Logan to our show. Again, he's a former state senator. He used to represent the 17th District, which included several towns between New Haven and Waterbury. He was born and raised in Connecticut. George Logan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lucy. Appreciate it. Good morning, everyone.
I should get out of the way that you, besides being a longtime politician, working for a long time at Aquarian, you're a pretty good guitar player, too.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's a serious side hobby of mine. I started taking it up in high school, and I've, it's my solace. You know, every day I practice a little bit.
Now, in your campaign announcement, you mentioned that you're the son of immigrants. I believe your grandparents came from or were from Jamaica. They moved to Guatemala. That's where your parents were born and raised. And then they came to Connecticut in the 1960s. So where did you grow up and how did your upbringing lead you into politics, George?
Sure. I grew up in inner city New Haven, in the Hill section of New Haven. As you mentioned, I've got parents from Guatemala, Central America, and I've got cousins and, my grandmother was here when I was growing up. And so I learned a lot in terms of the local culture of my neighborhood and also of my Latino background as well. So a lot of the customs from my Latino roots were integrated in my growing up. So it was a great upbringing, a very diverse community in New Haven that I grew up in.
You were a Connecticut senator representing, as I mentioned, the 17th district. That includes Ansonia, where you live. You were a senator for 4 years, and you lost your reelection last November. So why run for Congress, George?
Well, I got a lot of assistance and help growing up, right, from humble economic backgrounds. I spent a lot of times in my youth going to the local Boys and Girls Club and YMCA. And there are a lot of people, along the way that helped me out. So it just got ingrained in my head that once I made it, and that meant graduating from college and getting a job, that then it would be my turn to give back to a state, a community that's given me so much. So I've been consistently, I'm 52 years old now, I've been consistently over the last 25 plus years, volunteering at different organizations. It's just something in me to try to help, help others. And I found that by volunteering and helping others, it also helps me to grow as a person as well. And I found, good success, even in the business community, in my private life, by helping others. I see it all as we're all in a network, together, trying to improve our lives. And I think the people power of people, individuals working together in a group with different thoughts and ideas and backgrounds, I think is the best way to come up with solutions to our common problems.
So was this something on your ambition list to run for Congress, or did the state Republican Party approach you, George Logan? Again, Johanna Hayes made a history in our state as the first Black woman to represent the 5th District. You're a man of color, and now you're interested in running in this district.
Well, growing up, my focus after college was my, career and, raising a family, and getting a home and, getting all of my finances together, that sort of thing. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I had sort of down the road, the idea or notion that I would get involved in the community in terms of public service. I didn't know if that meant, at the local town or municipal level or at the state level. Or in Congress, but over time I've sort of developed more and more experience in terms of representing my my district, more and more experience in terms of what seeing what the needs are of folks throughout Connecticut. And I think the 5th congressional district going to Congress, that's the race that excites me most right now. And I think I can make the biggest impact to the folks in Western Connecticut through this through this election, through this running for the 5th in the our congressional district. I think it's exciting. It's a time for a change. You know, me personally, I just don't believe that this one party rule that we have here in Connecticut and in Washington is healthy for the overall, moving forward for the overall health of our state or our nation. I do believe in diversity of thoughts and ideas. And I think it's about time we get a Republican in our congressional delegation to help pull the rest of the folks more towards the center. I think we're leaning a bit too far left in terms of our representation here in Connecticut and in Washington.
I had mentioned or had asked you if the state party had approached you to run, George. We know that it's been a rough time for Republicans in recent years. We know that it's been a long time that a Republican has held a congressional seat in our state. There's no Republicans in statewide office. Democratic governor is expected to run for reelection next year. And you mentioned that you feel that that things have gone too far left, but in the sense that voters will vote for people that they want to see in office. And so a lot of that leads to the type of candidate and the issues that they support. So let's talk about some of the issues. If you're elected to be in the 5th district, what do you want to accomplish in Washington?
Sure. When I get out in the community and I talk to folks, whether it's individuals or businesses, right now at the top of the list is affordability. Inflation is increasing at a much higher rate than we would like. And everything from the cost of a gallon of gas to milk to diapers to childcare is going up. And I believe that I feel that the policies that we have coming out of the Biden administration, that is more spending, increasing taxes on folks. I think that is going to lead to further inflation, and it's going to put a further burden on the folks in Western Connecticut. We need individuals to be able to afford to live. We need businesses to be able to thrive and have the opportunity to grow and to hire more people. And I think we need more of a focus in that area.
You're hearing George Logan here on Where We Live. He's a Republican candidate running for the 5th Congressional District seat against Representative Johanna Hayes. He hopes to run against her and launched his campaign. So a lot to happen between now and next year, George Logan. But if you have a question for him, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. You mentioned inflation and spending, cutting taxes. But the 5th District, we're getting a lot of comments on social media because the 5th District includes the town of Newtown, where we know what happened there, a tragedy affecting so many lives, so many people. There's been increased support for a change in gun laws. Where do you stand?
Well, here in Connecticut, we have some of the most restrictive gun laws in all of the nation. So I don't think we need any additional restrictions on gun laws here in Connecticut. And I am in favor of the Constitution. I want to go to Washington to support the Constitution. I think the Second Amendment, as well as all the rest of the Constitution, is something that we must not take lightly to try to infringe on those rights. I think some of the issues that we're seeing here in Connecticut and in the nation in terms of violence has more to do to other factors than necessarily simply firearms. So I think it's important that we stay focused. I think having opportunities for folks and jobs and people want to be able to support themselves and their families. I think that's where the focus needs to be. And again, here in Connecticut, we have some of the most restrictive gun laws in all of the nation. So again, looking at the economy, looking at affordability, that's really where my priority is.
But when we look nationwide, interest from many Americans to support background checks for all gun purchases, where do you stand on that? And also, would you support a federal ban on assault weapons and large capacity magazines if elected to Congress, George?
So here in Connecticut, we already have an assault weapon ban, if you will. Nationally, I would go to Congress and we would have the debate on that to make sure we define what an assault weapon is, and looking at all those factors. Again, I would not take it lightly. I'm absolutely open to the discussion But we have to have some good reason, real tight legislation to take a look at any further infringements on our Second Amendment rights. It's something I take very, very seriously and nothing to be taken cavalierly. So any infringement on our Second Amendment rights is something that I'm very, very hesitant to move on and change. So, it takes sensibility, it takes discussion, and that is what I'm certainly committed to doing.
One more question related to gun laws. You were a state senator for, I believe, 4 years. Connecticut Against Gun Violence wants to know why you voted against banning bump stocks. It's the device used to convert assault weapons into machine guns.
Well, again, looking at a title of a bill and folks coming up with legislation, proposed bills that really are more political stunts than actually practical. So while they're spending time in Connecticut talking about bump stocks, when here in Connecticut, one, we already have this assault weapons ban. Two, there's no company that was making bump stocks here in Connecticut. So to me, it was a symbolic waste of time to try to pass something like that, to debate something like that when it's really not an issue here in Connecticut. So that's the reason why. I mean, again, I want practical solutions to real problems, and not just these sort of symbolic gestures that don't really get to the root of the problem. Which, again, here in Connecticut, it's a matter of jobs and opportunity and affordability, supporting our communities and our law enforcement, and working together on those topics and those issues and those areas that are actually going to make a difference here in Connecticut.
Again, you're hearing George Logan here on Where We Live. He's running in the 5th District to unseat incumbent Democrat Congresswoman Johanna Hayes. You can join us with your question. We know the 5th District is an interesting district, a lot that's happened there in recent years. If you are resident of the 5th District, you can ask George Logan a question at 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I mentioned that you live in Ansonia. That's not in the 5th Congressional district. So talk about, at what point do you plan to move if this is something you're serious about?
Sure. It's something I'm very serious about. But, first of all, I currently, where I live right now, I meet the residency requirement to run for Congress. So that's not, the issue at all. But going back in history, when I was when I was married back in 1995, I was married in Brookfield. Brookfield is in the 5th Congressional District. The very house that I live in today, the bed that I go to sleep in today, the same one that I sleep in back in 2000 when I moved in, was in the 5th Congressional District. And due to redistricting, those lines changed. So we're talking, and so I was part of the community then. I work in several towns throughout the 5th Congressional District. I have for the last 25 years. I've even built a bridge in one of the towns, worked on various water systems. I'm a water company engineer and executive. And I'm also a member of the Housatonic Valley Association Board of Directors. I'm the vice president. I've been on that for several years. So I have lots of touches in the 5th Congressional District. I have been a part of the community for the last 25 plus years, and I will plan to continue to do that. And I'm hopeful to be able to represent the folks in the 5th Congressional District, come November 2022. Now, as far as moving, I already have plans to move to buy another property, and I can't think of a better place than Western Connecticut for my new home.
You can join our conversation 888-720-9677 or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Peter's calling from Litchfield. Peter, what's your question?
Sure, thanks so much. I was just wondering if Mr. Logan could get a little bit more specific when he said pushing back against the Biden administration, raising taxes and spending. So that's often sort of a trope that's given out there. But if he could drill down a little bit and give real specifics in terms of what taxes have been raised, what spending that's different from previous administrations, that would be great.
Sure. I mean, the general idea, the theory here is that spending more money, increasing taxes, and utilizing them for programs that perhaps are redundant, perhaps that I think are not efficient, is not the way to go. I mean, inflation is the bane of many countries. You take a look at other countries like Venezuela, Colombia, take a look at the history of the United States of America. Whenever we've had hyperinflation, it has led to bad things for the country. So my focus is not to be in a rush to raise taxes. Lucy, I heard you mention lowering taxes. Look, my focus right now is not to raise a tax. I think we need to become better at not raising taxes and find ways to make it easier for folks to have opportunities for employment, for businesses to thrive. Because I believe that the only way that we're going to be able to get out of this economic crisis that we're in a sustainable way is by having a healthy economy where businesses are thriving and people have opportunities for jobs and to work. So by giving out money, by increasing taxes, by increasing inflation, I think that has the opposite effect of attempting to make a healthier, stronger economy. And I believe if you look at the United States in our past history, when we have more controlled spending, when we're not raising taxes, when we are focused on keeping the economy healthy, we have seen good things happen. And so that's where my focus is on. Look, we need to make sure that we take care of those folks that are in a bad situation, that need assistance or a leg up, but we need to do that in an effective manner. And Washington just has a tendency of not being very efficient and wasting a lot of money, right? You take a look at the COVID package, right? The Democrats' leadership in Washington, $1 trillion proposal, and over $1 trillion of that funding is unrelated to combating, the coronavirus. That's just an example. That package includes billions of dollars. Like I've heard a number like $300 or almost $400 billion to bail out states like California and New York that are poorly run. So those are the kinds of things that are, put in legislation, in bills that I believe don't serve the true intent of it. And it results in a lot of extra spending and, not really focused on the true intent of many of the bills that are put out there.
Let's talk more about the COVID relief money. You'd said that, a lot of it is wasteful. But when we think about how low-income Americans, even middle-class families, have struggled in this pandemic, I'm looking at a report from CNBC that Americans added nearly $4 trillion to their savings during the pandemic. Most of those gains went to the wealthy. And so when we talk about COVID relief, if you think part of it was a waste, I mean, how would you support lower-income and middle-income families in this country, George?
I would support them by giving folks more opportunities because I believe that folks want to have that ability to be able to work and to be able to afford and to be able to pay their bills and to provide opportunities for their for their families. I don't believe that temporary one-time giveaway of cash or money is going to do it. We need jobs, right? We need sustainable jobs. We need good-paying jobs. We need a healthy economy that is supported by our elected officials in Congress. I think that is the best way to lift people, lift individuals, lift our families out of poverty.
But we were living an unprecedented time with a worldwide public health crisis and that COVID relief money helping people who weren't able to work or, frankly, were afraid to work. And so we know that federal unemployment benefits are going to be expiring in September. Schools hopefully will be reopening. When we think about the labor demand and some of that easing, when you talk about an economic crisis, what do you mean?
Coming out of the pandemic, right, we need to, our economy needs to recover. So as elected officials, I believe Congress's role is to come up with policies and a plan that's going to make the economic recovery of our nation as quick and efficient and smart as possible. And I believe that increasing spending in a way that doesn't directly help the economy, that doesn't directly help the individuals that these bills supposedly are aimed to help, I think that doesn't help at all. And again, I gave the example of the COVID package. I think that package does have a lot of spending that is not directly in line with the pandemic. And I think that's the problem. I think Congress oftentimes plays those types of tricks and roles and adding extra spending that doesn't hit the root of the problem. We have to stop that.
Again, you're hearing George Logan. He's a Republican candidate running in the 5th Congressional District race against incumbent Johanna Hayes. You can join our conversation. We're going to take a quick break, but stay on the line. Here's the number, 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. Hartford HealthCare recently celebrated the opening of the Ridge Recovery Center in Windham. Christy Scott, Vice President of Clinical Operations, describes this new state-of-the-art destination for healing.
Individuals will come if they're suffering from substance use disorder and get individualized treatment. They can stay up to 3 to 4 weeks and receive family therapy, individual therapy, group therapy, and lots of other holistic care like yoga, trail walking, acupuncture. So it's going to be a great place for people to come and heal.
For those seeking recovery, finding it close to home can sometimes be challenging.
Many individuals travel to Florida and other states that have more treatment centers, so we're hoping by doubling our capacity at Hartford HealthCare, the individuals can stay in their home state with their family and support systems close by.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Hi, this is Colin McEnroe. You're listening to a podcast right now. You probably know that. But if you were listening on the air, you'd also know we're in the middle of a fun drive. And even though you're not listening on the air, you're listening to a podcast. That doesn't change the fact that we need your support. And one way that you can support this show that you maybe even love or at least like is to visit ctpublic.org/donate and make a donation today. Thanks for everything that you do already. We are very grateful.
Join Connecticut Public and Fairfield County's Community Foundation for the In Community Speaker Series May 2nd, featuring New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah Jones, creator of the 1619 Project. Jones will talk about her work covering racial injustice and the legacy of slavery on our culture, our politics, and our institutions. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. at District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets at ctpublic.org/speakerseries. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Will 2022 be the year Republicans win control of the U.S. House? My guest is hoping to flip Connecticut's 5th Congressional District seat. Former State Senator George Logan is a Republican who's launched a campaign against incumbent Democrat Representative Johanna Hayes. If you live in the 5th District, what questions do you have for George Logan? 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Eric's calling in. Go ahead, Eric, with your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I am from New Haven, not in the 5th District, but the senator doesn't have to live in the 5th to run. I guess I don't have to live in it to ask a question. I actually have two questions. The first is, does the senator support the For the People Act and the John Lewis Act, especially the nonpartisan gerrymandering part, considering that would probably help him in the 5th if we did have nonpartisan gerrymandering? And the second is, the senator's talking a lot about fiscal responsibility. Where would he have fallen on the tax cut that went through the GOP Congress and under President Trump, which flowed mainly to the wealthiest and to corporations, had very little impact on job creation and went mostly into buybacks and into the wealthiest pockets. And I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you.
All right, let's do the voting rights legislation question first. And let's talk about the tax cuts under Trump, George.
For the People Act, where I think we're talking about voter registration as an opt-in system to an opt-out process. I think anything that helps to encourage folks to vote, I think is a good thing. However, the integrity of our voting system is also extremely important as well. In an opt-out process, considering the you know, diversity of all the folks that we have in the United States of America, when considering all of the so many undocumented persons that we have. We need to make sure that the folks that are voting in the right area, that they are actually eligible to vote, that sort of thing. So an opt-out process in our society, I think, is quite problematic.
The Republican Party often talks about making sure that there's integrity in elections. But when we look at what happened in our last presidential election, very little evidence of voter fraud. And you had a president who continued to perpetuate what was not true, and that he won this race and it was taken away from him. And so how do you address that as a Republican?
Well, you know, as an American citizen, I think folks have a right to, you know, question any results of any election or any process, you know, in a, you know, respectful, correct manner. But, you know, I certainly do not believe in any unfounded, you know, assumptions or I base my opinions and thoughts on facts and science and those sorts of things. So, you know, I'm all ears. I think folks have a right to question any election results, question what the government, you know, is doing. But I certainly am not supportive of espousing false or unproven narratives without the disclaimer that it's an unproven narrative and just an opinion. So that's where I stand on that.
Well, we are definitely living in a time where our country has become more divisive. And when we hear that many people still don't believe the election results, isn't that problematic as somebody who wants to go to Washington to fix all the problems that we have, George?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. We have this radical partisanship that's you know, out there, right? Folks on the extreme left and folks on the extreme right. I think we need to bring more sensibility to Washington. That's precisely why I'm running. I have a history of bringing people together. For example, I was able to win a couple election cycles in what was considered a blue or Democrat district. I worked well with folks on both sides of the aisle to find solutions to our common problems and working together. And I look for folks with different thoughts and ideas, because oftentimes I find that we're all looking to solve the same problem, but we may go at it at a different way. And I believe that the incumbent Congresswoman Hayes, you know, she is a part of that problem that we have in Washington. You know, when she supports, you know, 100% of the time the policies and issues of Nancy Pelosi, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make decisions that are in the best interest of the people of Connecticut and of Western Connecticut specifically. You know, so that's exactly why I want to go to Washington. I want to change the tenor. And how do you do that? You do that by getting different people down there and bringing more sensibility down to Washington. So the way I have conducted myself here in Connecticut, the way I've conducted myself in the legislature, in our community, I plan on bringing that to Washington and helping change the tide there in terms of the attitudes that we've got going on down there. We need folks working more together. We need folks from both sides of the aisle to find common ground. And I think I'm a good individual for helping to achieve that.
Let's take some more calls from listeners. You can join us, too, if you have a question for Republican candidate for the 5th Congressional District seat. That's George Logan with us today. 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WMPR. Keith is calling in. Go ahead, Keith, with your question. Keith, can you hear me? It doesn't look like Keith is there anymore. So let's take Jake. Jake, you're on the show. Go ahead.
Hi. Candidate Logan has talked a lot about inflation. And one way to deal with inflation is to ensure that wages rise with inflation. So I'm curious about his stance on raising the federal minimum wage to a living wage and then tying increases in that wage to inflation. And also, as an employer, whether he's willing to commit that his company will tie his employees' wages to inflation to support their own families.
Sure. You know, when we take a look at inflation and wages, certainly, you know, here in Connecticut, we have one of the highest minimum wages in all the nation, right? So, and we still are in an economic crisis here. Nationally, the federal minimum wage is much lower. I'm certainly in favor of reviewing that and looking at that to make sure it is at the right level. But I just don't believe that artificially increasing the minimum wage is going to solve our problems. I think we need a healthy economy where businesses are competing for workers. They're competing for employees. And I think that's the better way to increase wages. You talk about a livable wage. What's a little livable wage? You know, I think we need to give folks opportunities. We need to focus on improving our economy, having businesses grow, and we need to have businesses out there that are you know, competing for employees, that we're giving, making sure folks have the ability to be properly educated and trained, and to be able to utilize their unique gifts to come up with ways to help society in terms of employment, in terms of taking care of their families and those sorts of things. So yes, I do believe that we, as Congress, always needs to look at the federal minimum wage, make sure it's at the right level. But I don't think that the minimum wage should be used as the panacea for solving poverty. It just hasn't worked, and it's not going to work. We need to make sure that we have a healthy, vibrant economy, and that we're providing individuals with enough opportunities so that they can thrive. And that's what's lacking now.
Paul's calling in from Newington. Paul, what's your question for George Logan?
Hey, George. Listen, I just want to say thank you. It's very refreshing to have a voice and have a voice be heard. I'm a retired law enforcement. I did 20 years in the NYPD, retired as a sergeant, and I've never seen such disconnect between civilians and law enforcement. And I'm wondering if, a strategy may be put in place to, try to give the police officers and law enforcement a little bit more power, get their power back. I feel like their hands are tied in so many situations, and it's causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, thank you for that comment and that question. I mean, first of all, I want to thank you for your service to our community as well. You know, you and others in law enforcement who, risk your lives every day to keep our families and our communities safe. I think it's something that we should always respect. Now, here in Connecticut, when you take a look at what's happening here in Connecticut in terms of law enforcement, we have lots of good law enforcement here in Connecticut, lots of community policing. I believe that law enforcement can always be improved. There's no question about it. But to go to the extreme of disfunding the police and dismantling police departments here in Connecticut or nationally, I just don't think that's the way to go. And I think because of the poor leadership from a lot of the left-leaning Democrat leadership in Washington, I think what it's doing is sending the wrong message. And I think that's why you see this wave of partly responsible for this wave of crime that we see here in Connecticut, increasing throughout Connecticut, particularly the western part of Connecticut and the nation as well. I think law enforcement is a very vital and important part of keeping our nation civilized and safe, and we need to work with law enforcement and not be focusing our time and spending our time looking for ways to defund the police and dismantle police. That is absolutely the wrong way to go. I don't believe that it's good to be soft on crime. Again, I go back to giving folks opportunities and a reason to be productive in society is the way to go. But those who do commit criminal acts and break the law, they should suffer consequences for that. And the public needs to know that. It is not okay to break the law. It's not okay to hurt people. It's not okay to rob individuals. And I don't believe that this soft on crime attitude from the incumbent in our congressional delegation here in Connecticut and the Democrat leadership in Washington, I don't think it's the way to go. And I think that's partly why you see a lot of the discord and violence throughout the nation.
Richard's calling in from Woodbridge. Richard, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. If you became a member of Congress, so many of the Republican delegation buy into the big lie that Trump actually won the election. What's your opinion about this? Thank you.
Sure. No, thank you for that. I do believe that Joe Biden is the president of the United States of America. I I'm running for Congress. You know, campaigns are about the future. So, you know, I don't spend a lot of time going back in history. I want to move forward. Now, the next presidential election, I certainly will be hoping that we get a more fiscally conservative individual as president of the United States. But right now, Joe Biden is the president of the United States of America. His policies are the ones that I will be trying to influence in Washington next year. And I want to do everything possible to make sure that I help to pull these policies more towards the center, because I think they're just way too left-leaning. And I think we need more conservatism in Washington. And I want to bring that to Washington.
George, related to that question, my colleague Colin wants to know, were House Republicans right to oppose certification of those 2020 election results? How would you have voted?
So, you know, again, my focus is on moving forward. So if I was in Congress, I would take a look at the situation and look at the facts and the numbers. Now, as an outsider, someone who's not in Congress, you're asking me how I would have voted on it. But I would have certified the election based on what I know and what I read. But I would not discourage folks to continue to investigate and to look and find irregularities. And if there's something there, then I think it should be taken up at the appropriate time. But to not certify the election results, that would not be something that I would take lightly.
Laura's tweeted at us that she lives in the 5th District. She wants to know your stance on the January 6th commission, George.
Sure. So, you know, I call it Nancy Pelosi's January 6th commission. I am not in favor of that Nancy Pelosi January 6th commission, because I think she's turned it totally into a political, a political tool. And I think it really needs to be something that's nonpartisan, is fair. Look, I would have preferred to have a nonpartisan group like the Department of Justice conduct this investigation. I remember when the Democrats and Republicans couldn't come up with what this January 6th commission should look like. And President Biden suggested, well, why don't I do a presidential commission? And Nancy Pelosi says, no way in the world will I allow that to happen. Why? Because she wants to control the January 6th commission. She is approving who gets to sit on the commission, right? So that to me is very problematic. It's very partisan, and I think it does a disservice to all the people, law enforcement, those who lost their lives, those that were hurt. I think we need to make sure that it should be more of a nonpartisan investigation, and we do not have that right now under the Nancy Pelosi January 6th Commission.
I wanted to ask you before we let you go, on Thursday, the person that you're running against, Representative Johanna Hayes, posted a video that she took of campaign trackers following her outside her office. She says they do it every day. They're shouting at her the same questions over and over while pointing their cell phones at her. One of them became pretty irate when she would not answer them. They're just seem to be trying to provoke her. We know what trackers do. These videos end up in campaign videos. And in a message on Twitter, Representative Hayes blames the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee for sending these trackers. How do you respond, or what's your response to this? And should trackers be doing this to candidates? Is it crossing the line?
Look, first of all, I would start by saying, Congresswoman Hayes, welcome to the big leagues. I don't know what you thought you're getting into running for Congress. I deal with the same thing myself. I've never been a congressperson, but here in the state legislature on election day, I have folks with bullhorns yelling at me while I was at the polls. I've got trolls on social media. You know, I mean, again, this is this is the tenor that I'm trying to go to Washington to change. Those sorts of things happen on both sides of the aisle. Again, I think it's a matter of the leadership in Washington, demanding, leading, and turning the tide in terms of attitudes and civility in terms of how we handle communicating with our elected officials and how we handle getting our message and point across. But to consider this or call this some sort of Republican made tactic, I would argue this was created by the Democrat leadership in Washington. They perfected it, and it's a matter of both sides, I think, perhaps could tone it down a bit as far as that goes. I certainly believe that Congresswoman Hayes and all the rest of the folks in Congress, should be given the ability to do their jobs. But the public also has a right, as far as our First Amendment, to ask whatever questions they want, to videotape them. And under no circumstance would I ever pretend not to be George Logan, pretend not to be me. So you've got to find a way to, handle those distractions. I think I've been pretty good at handling it myself at the local level. And I certainly believe I can handle it in Washington as well. But again, I would never deny who I am, and I would never pretend to be someone else when I'm the Congress, thinking positively, when I'm the congressman representing the 5th Congressional District. Mm.
George, have you seen these videos? I mean, do you condemn this kind
of...
And you think that this is just par for the job, that she should just handle people chasing her with cell phones, becoming irate, shouting questions at her?
Well, no, I am not in favor of that. I don't think that's a great way to go. But for the congresswoman to imply that she's the only one that experiences that is just not the case. So again, I would like to see a change in terms of civility and attitude with folks down in Washington. But it's not something that I think is the way that we should act as a nation. And I don't support that. I would condone that type of behavior or activity. When you're looking at one-party rule in Washington, when you look at all the tactics that have been used by the Democrat leadership, that really pales in comparison to the tricks that have been played by the Democrat leadership in Washington. So, it's something that I'm hoping I can go down to Washington and to help to bring more civility. When voices feel that they're being heard, they're not going to take, I think, as to those types of tactics. But right now, you've got one party rule in Washington. The country is leaning far to the left, and there are a lot of individuals who are not happy with the way the country is going. And I would argue that here in Connecticut, there are a lot of Republicans, moderate Democrats, conservative-leaning Democrats, all of the unaffiliated voters here in Connecticut, many of whom are conservative-leaning as well, and they want to see something different. They want to see a change. And they don't feel that their voice is being heard by the incumbent, Congresswoman Johanna Hayes, and I want to change that. I want to make sure that their voice is heard in Washington, and that I focus on the issues of the folks in the 5th Congressional District and not those of the leadership down in Washington. We need to, I think, refocus and really go down to Washington to represent the people who have actually elected us.
You've been hearing George Logan here on Where We Live. He's a Republican candidate for the 5th Congressional District seat. George, we'll probably have you back on. It's a long time between now and that election. We thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I look forward to the opportunity. Take care, everyone. Be safe.
This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. Coming up, we're going to hear from Christine Stewart from CT News Junkie and NBC Connecticut. You can join us too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. We just heard from George Logan. He's a former state senator. He's a Republican running to unseat Democratic incumbent Representative Johanna Hayes in 2022. Christine Stewart joins us now on Zoom. She's owner and editor-in-chief of CT News Junkie, a reporter for NBC Connecticut. Christine, welcome back.
Good morning.
So where would you like to start? Shall we talk about the trackers and George Logan's response to the big leagues?
Yeah, they are the big league. So, just a walk down memory lane here. Trackers probably started in 2006. I want to say maybe in the Lieberman, Ned Lamont race for the U.S. Senate. So I think that they are part of politics, and they have been since 2006. And I don't think that they are going away. And I think that I don't think that there's anybody who likes a tracker. And I don't know if anybody who is a tracker who, has been able to get that aha moment captured on video.
We talked about a lot of different issues. Let's talk about gun laws, because again, that 5th congressional seat, definitely a district where voters are concerned about gun laws in our country. I mean, any surprises from George Logan as a Republican running on this issue?
No, I mean, as a Republican running on this issue, I think that, you know, he obviously supports the Second Amendment and doesn't believe that there's any reason to, you know, ban assault weapons nationally. We haven't had a national assault weapon ban since the Brady Act. So in Connecticut, we do. So Connecticut is a little bit different. We did pass those laws in 2013 following Sandy Hook, and Sandy Hook is in the 5th congressional district.
This might be the first time some of our listeners have heard about George Logan. Tell us a little bit about what he was like as a state senator representing, I think, the 17th district, and a little bit about his background. And is this something that, you know, does he have an uphill battle when we think about running in the 5th district with name recognition, but also the fact that Johanna Hayes is pretty popular?
Yeah, so she's running for her third term. And so it's usually easiest to unseat an incumbent after their first term. But the 5th congressional district seems to be, you know, one of the lowest hanging fruits for Republicans. It's a purple district, so Republican registration is high, but they have not redistricted yet. So the redistricting committee will be meeting and coming up with drawing those lines in September. So I guess we will see exactly what it looks like, you know, but it is definitely a winnable district for Republicans, but it's hard to unseat an incumbent. And there hasn't been a Republican from Congress in Connecticut since 2006, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so when we think about the type of money that this this potential race could bring into our state, this is a fairly competitive seat.
It is definitely a competitive seat. I do believe that nationally it could get some attention if they do believe that it is winnable. And, you know, former Senator Logan is a formidable candidate.
And why is that? Tell us what about him makes him formidable.
You know, I think that having been in state office, so having that under his belt, the 5th congressional district, as far as voter registration is concerned, you know, their Democrats do have the advantage, but Republicans come pretty close. And Connecticut, when you scratch the surface, there's always a cranky Yankee underneath. So he kind of speaks to that, and he's not necessarily a partisan. From what I saw up here, from his work in the state Senate, it's not a hard, he's not a strict partisan on many of these issues, worked with his colleagues across the aisle on several things.
So moving on from talking about George Logan's candidacy, we know that COVID, the numbers are starting to creep up. People are being asked to continue to mask indoors. A lot of people aren't happy about that, but we're not some states in the South, so that's a good thing. But what will you be watching for in the next few weeks, Christine?
It should be interesting. You know, we're getting ready for back to school. So I think we're all waiting for Governor Lamont to make an announcement about whether kids will be mandated to wear their masks when they get back to school, or if he's going to do like Charlie Baker did in Massachusetts and say, hey, look, that's up to the local authorities. You know, I think that we're going to see a lot of parents nervous about sending their kids back to school. And then there's, you know, there's the divide. There's a lot of parents who don't want to send their kids back to school with a mask on because they don't believe that it's necessary.
Just wanted to share, my children never complained about a mask. What about you, Christine?
It became a fairness issue because my daughter cannot be vaccinated because she is under the age of 12. And so mommy is vaccinated, and she would like me to also wear my mask if she has to wear her mask.
Before we go, you know, I want to ask you, your opinion of what we're seeing with the fallout from this damning investigation against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and how Governor Lamont and some of his colleagues, peers rather, have handled this. Does it cramp Lamont's style that so much of what we've been doing in COVID related to New York's direction, and now we have a governor who may be impeached?
Yeah, I don't think that it, you know, that it reflects anything on Governor Lamont. Governor Lamont did reach out to Governor Cuomo in 2009 and tried to work with him on several issues before COVID even hit, tried to work with him on cannabis legalization and doing things similar with vaping across state lines. You know, and he made friends with him. And I think it was really difficult yesterday to come out and to ask him to resign. But I think that the investigation, if you read the report, is very, very clear. And there is a power differential. And it looks like Governor Cuomo used that to take advantage of some of the employees in his office.
We've been speaking with Christine Stewart from CT News Junkie and NBC Connecticut. Christine, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Today's show produced by Matt Dwyer. Our technical producer is Kat Pastor. Carmen Baskoff was on the phones today. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up tomorrow, about 1 in 3 Americans lives in a doubled-up household. That is, with other adults who aren't their partner or college-aged child. On the next Where We Live, we take a look at sharing a living space as an adult. Do you live with roommates? We hope to hear from you tomorrow.